You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Swap your HR hat for peace of mind with We Do HR Support. From compliance to training, we're your HR department. Explore how at wedo-hr.com.
Good morning, happy Sunday. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, we share the stories, expertise and knowledge of business leaders, large and small, with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. On today's show, we are going to be talking all about hospitality in Oxfordshire, and we're going to be talking about some general business along the way as well. And to do this, I'm joined by George Chambak of the Sandys Group and indeed Paddle People, which I'm really intrigued to learn more about. This is a Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming George after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Hopefully you enjoyed that song. Today, I'm really, really excited, actually, to be talking about hospitality in Oxfordshire. And to do that, I have George Sandbach with me. Welcome, George.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks so much for joining me. So for those who don't know you, or indeed don't know the Sandys Group or Paddle People, tell those listening at home a little bit about you and indeed your businesses.
Yeah, sure. So I'll get to the Sandys Group. So what we are, we're a collection of bars in Oxford. So we have a bar called Sandy's Piano Bar. We also have the Oxford Wine Cafe and the Oxford Wine Cellar. The Oxford Wine Cellar being our newest venture. We opened in October last year. We are also part of the Oxford Wine Company as a family, which my father started about 30 years ago. So we're a group of bars and alcohol brands. We've been kicking around Oxford now for about 10 years as the bars stand right now. I also own a company called Paddle People, as you mentioned earlier. So paddle, otherwise known as paddle tennis, is a very new sport to the country, growing hugely. And so me and a good friend of mine started a company about 2 years ago. And we've got our first site open in Wimbledon. And we're going through our public consultation at the moment in Oxford, actually, right in the centre of Oxford, behind the parks, for a big site there, which I'm sure I can tell you about later on.
Amazing. No, look forward to hearing more about that over the next hour. But before that, you have chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
The song currently is Would That I by Hozier. I just love it. I think it's really chilled and really uplifting. That's why I like it. But that's my song for now. But I'll go through each week. My songs will change. But Would That I by Hozier.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that great song chosen by George, today we're talking all about hospitality in Oxfordshire, and we're going to be talking about some paddle as well, which will be good fun throughout the show. So, George, I just want to start with quite a big, broad question, if that's okay. How is hospitality in Oxfordshire? Let's start with a big question.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's I think Oxfordshire is a really interesting one. I think it's one like no other. I think cities in general and large towns are doing okay. So London, obviously, is its own little thing. Oxford, Bristol, Bath, Manchester, Liverpool, places like that do pretty well still. You've got a lot of people there. Oxford's got the benefit of two very large universities. Mm. So trade for us is pretty good. Trade's good.
Right.
Staff is the issue. I think we've talked about previously before, but you know, the Brexit came along, which wasn't great for us, but then paired up with COVID when people went back to their original countries or hometowns and never came back. So really lacking in especially management. You're always going to find, I think, part-time staff here and there. You know, when you're 18 to 23, a lot of kids want to do some work and earn some money and have a good time. And that's great. It's then coming up to the management is really tough. So we found it hard in recruitment. I think when you go outside of Oxford and go into Oxfordshire, it becomes a lot harder. The pubs are really struggling. Unless you've got tons of money behind you and you can get in these amazing chefs, it's really hard to have your USP. And I totally get it. I mean, if you're, you know, in your early 30s with a kid and looking to buy your new house, And you know, or your mortgage has doubled. Are you going to go out midweek? I don't think you would. I mean, I'm doing the same. I'm trying to buy a house, and do I go out midweek? Not that much. I'd love to. I try and support hospitality industry, but it's really hard, and I totally get it. I went to the Oxford Wine Company the other day to get some stuff in the warehouse, and I saw our sales director Neil, and he was packing in out of empty wine cases into the back of his car. I went, Neil, what are you doing? He's like, oh, three pubs in Burford closed this week. I said, oh, geez. I mean, it's tough. So I think Oxford does okay. And I think it's down a little bit, but I think the countryside in Oxfordshire is much more affected. And I think elsewhere across the country, it's really tough.
And I guess if we go back one step and we talk about the COVID word, it was widely reported that the hospitality sector really struggled during COVID. And I think that without being too political, there's a lot of arguments say that the hospitality sector weren't supported quickly enough or the way they should be. And also, I know that there was the big energy crisis, which had a huge impact. Do you believe that those, I guess, COVID and the energy crisis, are we still seeing some of the scars and the wounds there that is impacting the challenge? And I'm keen to talk about staffing in a moment, but before we do that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're right not to get political. I'm the same. I don't like to get too political about it. It's, you know, we opened a bar a month before lockdown in London, in Chelsea. Wow. So huge rents. And we didn't qualify for the grant as well because we weren't trading long enough. And I get it. It's you know, they can't be forking out, you know, trillions because we just wouldn't have bounced back. So look, we took a big hit. We had to close that one. So are the effects still going? I'd say I think the world's just changing a lot, right? I think social media really, really went crazy over COVID with TikTok especially, and influencing change. And now a lot of these kids or the younger generation don't drink as much. Which is great. I mean, I'm a big sportsman, so I mean, it's great that these kids are drinking, and my other half doesn't drink either. But it does have a big impact on the trade. You know, when pubs are trying to get through kegs of beer and it's going out of date, or people aren't going out after their dinner, so they're finishing at 10:30 and going home. It's hard for the late night trade. Nightclubs, I think, really take a hit. I think the worst affected, especially in like the market towns or towns that they get really hit. So that is super hard. I think. People used to go out till 2:30, 3 a.m. I feel people go home probably an hour earlier now. They weren't used to going out late. And I think that has changed a lot. I think the next 5-10 years in hospitality will be super interesting. The thing is, I think people still want that social connection. They still want to meet people, and it's all well and good having dinner at home, but actually having a few drinks and chatting to other people in a bar, that's the fun bit. That's what I enjoy, and I think that's what everyone else enjoys. So getting up and standing around rather than sitting at your table. Because obviously during that COVID period, you had to sit down. You couldn't get up. You couldn't mingle. You had to have food. I mean, there was a chat about you had to have a pork pie and stupid stuff. But people, I really miss, and I think people really miss standing at a bar and chatting. So I think people will always keep coming out. It'll be interesting to see how financial models for businesses change in terms of how they charge people. You know, prices are going up, as we know. £7 pints aren't uncommon. You know, our cocktails, I think, about £12, but I see everywhere they're 14, 15 elsewhere. So it's tricky. And I think COVID, you're right, had an effect, but in different ways that people think.
No, absolutely. And I always think it's quite difficult to say, you know, why your business is better than others, but your bars do seem to be busy and they do have good reputation. What would be your advice to somebody listening right now if they were thinking about opening a bar in Oxford or they've got their own pub and they're not as busy as they'd like to be? What are the things that you've done that have made a big difference?
I think there's two things. I think you've got to have a USP. You've got to have something different. So we know we got two wine bars and a piano bar. The staff are all super knowledgeable on their product, and there are 250 wines in the wine bars at Sandy's. There's live music and people play all sorts of stuff. So there is a uniqueness to it. I think just going opening a cocktail bar, those days have sort of gone now. You've got to have something to do. You've seen the rise in leisure bars like Sixes, which is a cricket bar, and Flight Club, which is a darts bar. And there's all these sort of climbing walls are popping up, and that all these things are coming and people having activities to do. So it's really important to be able to do something. If you're opening a pub, your USP can be food, but it's got to be a really good quality or something different. But I think having something for people to do is important. The other thing is communication. I think communication to your audience and to your staff is really important. I think if people have got questions, getting back to them immediately, making sure people are having a good time in the venue. And that's where it comes down to staff and good staff. You've got to have social people behind the bar. Too often I've seen it. I've gone into pubs and the service is bad. Do I blame that person for not being good at their job? I actually don't. I think it's really hard because you can't train them because you don't have enough staff to train or the money to train. So it's a really hard thing when people go, oh, that pub wasn't very good. I was like, well, yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. So doing something different and having staff that can communicate to your guests is super important as well.
Absolutely. And just staying on this staff piece, in terms of being a good bar person or being a good waiter or being a good manager, how much of that do you feel can be taught, and how much of that do you feel is your natural demeanor or your natural personality? I'm just quite intrigued by that piece.
I'll know if someone's going to be good working behind the bar after 15 seconds of the interview. Eye contact, you know, a smile, body language, you can see it immediately. And it's really hard to teach it. I think some people can be a bit shy, a bit nervous, maybe when they're a bit younger. So you can teach some of it. It's the nature nurture thing as well, I suppose, isn't it? Can you teach it all? You can certainly teach people to learn how to do their job properly. And once they're good at their job and comfortable in the job and it's second nature, then their personality comes out because they're not worried and thinking about getting it wrong. So again, it does come with training to make staff feel wanted and comfortable. You know, how do you motivate them is another thing. Is are they motivated by lifestyle, money? Could be all sorts. Money usually the thing, but also lifestyle, especially in the hospitality industry. So, you know, you can teach people, you can tell people to smile, but they may not enjoy the job. They may be nervous. Mm. So, making them feel as welcome at the company as possible is super important.
Absolutely. No, really, really interesting points. We are going to go to a song, but we'll continue the conversation after this.
Introducing you to local trusted experts. This is The Business Brunch, sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Today, I'm really, really keen and excited to tell the story of the Stanley's Group, which is great. And later in the show, we're going to come on to a new sport here in Oxford, which is really, really exciting. George, before that break, we've touched a lot on what's going on in hospitality now. And I think one of the things that, or how you and I met, was talking on the BBC about the staffing crisis. And I think that it would only be right that we build on that a little bit more. And I think that there is definitely, as you rightly said, and I completely agree with you, in terms of there will always be somebody that wants a part-time bar job. But where the challenge maybe is that middle management, a bar manager. And I'm just quite keen for you to, I think there's a misconception sometimes from people outside hospitality that it is just a filling job whilst at uni, and it's not necessarily a career. But a lot of people have built really great careers in hospitality. So I'm just quite keen for you to share, I guess, kind of your own story, but then also some stories of people that you know that have done really well in hospitality, and almost what a career in hospitality can look like.
Yeah, I mean, on my career, it was previously I was a rackets professional, so in squash and rackets and stuff in the US and then in Manchester. And I think I did an office job for about 2 weeks, and I just realised I can't do it. I think, you know, I've got ADD, so it's I need to be doing stuff. I need to be, you know, doing lots of different things at the same time. And I think a lot of people feel that way, like they can't maybe concentrate for long periods of time, or they struggle to sit down at a desk all day. And this way, it's, you know, my day will consist of doing some account stuff and some social media stuff and some training and a new project. And there'll be loads of stuff going on in the day, which I would love. I'm not very good at sitting down and just doing one thing. And I feel a lot of people in the industry are very similar. They need to keep moving, they need to keep doing stuff. They're busy, busy, busy. And that's what makes a good hospitality worker. There's plenty of people I know in the industry that have done brilliantly. And, you know, it doesn't come quick. You got to work hard for it. And I think that's lost quite a lot in these days. You know, I think the younger generation, again, going back to the social media with Instagram and TikTok, you see some people making a lot of money very quickly, and it's luck. And it's just absolute luck. Or they're lying. and I feel sorry for the younger generation because they think they can just do that and that's how it works. The graft has got to go in. And I think when you're 18, 19 and you're early 20s, the graft has got to go in. And if you're good, you will get promoted really quickly. And the thing is, it's working for a company that will acknowledge that. You know, a big chain may not acknowledge that, and there'll be some fighting about who gets what position. Whereas the independent chain, you can really grow. And you can do that in the countryside, you can do it in towns, you can do it all over the place. I think obviously in London, there's much more opportunities. The really good people I've met in Oxfordshire ended up moving to London just because there's so many more companies in doing lots of amazing things. It's a bigger market, so I get it. So I think there is a huge, England's not like the US or Australia. You know, the US is a different kettle of fish. You can really make a lot of money on the weekends. Australia, though, that you're paid so much more. You know, the lifestyle's different at these places, right? So, you know, Australia, they're up in the morning, they're going surfing, it's nice weather, it's great. And you do your job and it's all happy because the weather's nice. When you're in England and it's cold and miserable and you're working the bar that's outside and it's cold, it's not great. So I get it. But I mean, I wouldn't have never done anything different. I absolutely love it. It's great. I love interacting with new people all the time, and the staff on the whole, I've had amazing management. My management now are superb. And it's great listening to them and their ideas, and they actually do most of the new stuff now. And it's super important to promote within and get them interested in the business. I mean, now they're all about growing the business and getting going. So they're actually, the three managers there are superb. They do a great job.
No, absolutely. I think within any sector, I think if you've got a team that are really engaged and are working towards a common goal, and they feel that individually they've got something to work towards, I think that's the point where you do get real longevity and you do get that real innovation piece.
Yeah.
Just moving sort of one step further, really, just in terms of something you said earlier in the show, in terms of you see hospitality changing quite a lot over the next 5 or 10 years. I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. What is your prediction? What do you see as hospitality in Oxfordshire in 5 or 10 years' time?
I think the non-alcoholic range is going to really kick on. So I can think, weirdly, I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I think you may see entrance fees increase, but the cost of products not increasing as much. So if I have 50 people in the venue, 100 people in the venue, and they're having a drink or a couple of mocktails, we're not going to survive as a business. So where do we get that money from? How do we work around that? And I think it comes with entrance fees. And I think also the government support hospitality business on this. You know, you see nightclubs really struggle, and I think they're the first to go. I think at universities they'll be okay. University towns will be okay because students, it's a good way to go out. And I know a few students who don't drink and still go out. But they're not propping up that bar's economy. So in time, will a lot more people stop drinking? I think they will. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I don't know. Maybe, as I said, maybe increasing on entrance fees to make their money there, high margins there. But then the nightlife in other non-uni towns is really struggling. And that will filter down to cocktail bars, wine bars with no food. And then I think food will become like absolute necessity to make your money there. So you might charge higher amounts on food and drinks maybe a bit cheaper. God, I don't know. Who knows? I wish I had my crystal ball, but it'll be interesting. I think we're at the moment hesitant to grow the business any further in the hospitality side. I want to do a sports bar in Oxford at some point, because small sports bar, really high quality, local, sports bar with some good American style food. That mix of Oxford and America, I think, is a really cool idea. But apart from that, I'm very hesitant to open, especially any site of size. It's really tricky. I think the chains will, there'll be more, a lot more chains going forward, I think, because they can afford to keep going and make smaller profits. But, you know, for me, if I was breaking even and taking money, no money out of the company, it becomes really hard. Whereas if you're a chain and you're making a 5, 10, 15K profit, that's okay because you just waited out and it's out into your portfolio. So it'll be interesting.
Absolutely. Please do that sports bar soon. my friends, we're big football fans, and we were only discussing the Euros. There isn't really a good sports bar in Oxfordshire, really.
I just sold actually my other bar, Little Sandy's in Whitney.
Yeah.
I sold about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they've opened a sports bar there called Jackson's.
Oh wow!
So I've been helping them a lot with that. And they're adding more stuff to it, but so far it's taken off really well. And I think a sports bar that's in Whitney, you know, my piano bar didn't work in Whitney. You know, there's not the clientele for it; it didn't work. Sports bar absolutely will work because people love sport and they want to have a pint and get together and do something. I'm sports mad. I play all sorts of stuff. I don't love watching sport out at a bar because it's either not loud enough or there's too many people not watching sport. But I think if you make a small enough one where it's all about the sport, I think that's where the market is. And also, as you say, I think there's O'Neill's and there's a few pubs that have sport on, which is great.
Absolutely.
But an out-and-out sports bar, I think, is what's missing.
Yeah, we need it. We need it. Do it, George. And also, just on this note, I'm going to be so unprofessional here. I'm a big, big Oxford United fan, and I really believe that this new stadium should be excelling all about Oxfordshire. And I think they should be selling Oxford beer and Oxford merchandise and really make about Oxfordshire. So if you're listening now, pick up the phone to George and see if you can get a sports bar at the new Oxford United Stadium and see if a deal can be done. So back to serious business here. I think something, again, that I'm quite keen to talk about is, I think often in this show, what a lot of people say to us is that in Oxford, there's not that many independents and there is a lot of chains. And that's something that you touched on there. Do you believe that there is a problem in Oxfordshire with that? And do you believe that if you're comparing Oxford to a Bath or to a Bristol or whatever, do you feel that we're maybe missing out on those quirky independents covered market type feel, which again maybe isn't what it once was?
Yeah, and actually Bath is a really good example of how a city is run really well. I mean, it's beautiful in itself, but they also support so many independents. I think it's the colleges, right? That's because they own everything. And actually recently I've been a lot more encouraged with the colleges and their forward thinkingness, but I know some sites in Oxford that have been empty for 4 or 5 years. And there are no plans to do anything with it. And I've eyed up one spot on the high street that I think would be brilliant. But they're not affordable. They're not working with tenants. So, you know, it should be done on a rent turnover basis. So you pay 10% of your rent, your turnover as rent, rather than a fixed fee where it locks you in. It's a bit scary and people are put off by it. But, you know, these shops have been empty for 5, 6, 7 years. So why not have a 5-year lease on a jeweler's or a craft shop or all sorts of stuff, all sorts of independence. And, you know, I'm a fairly entrepreneurial, although I don't like to say that word, I like doing more businesses. I would have taken a lot more units on and done stuff, but I can't because of the buildings are old, they need a lot of work. So you've got to spend a lot of money on them. And then the rents are too high. I would love to open a little beer shop in Oxford with tons of beers, local or all around the world, where you can have a few in as well, so a few tables. But I'm not risking it because, you know, I don't know where the industry's going. I don't want to be locked in these rent for 20 years and then have to spend another 100K on a unit where there's always problems. I mean, Oxford, the units themselves are derelict. The plumbings are terrible. So you're constantly spending money. I just spent, I don't even want to say how much, on refurbishing our new loos for, you know, like 15 square foot of loos, and I had to spend tens of thousands of pounds on it, and it's hard. So I really feel the colleges should be doing more stuff for the local community. We've spoken to these colleges at roundtable events and stuff. They have a different outlook on it. It's never going to be perfect. I get that. I just wish there's a bit more give. They're not a charity. Well, I mean, they are a charity, but they're not a charity, I suppose. And I wish they just made, they could make Oxford, it's in their hands to make Oxford much better. The council, I think, should be, you know, talking to them and overhauling them a little bit to encourage them to rent spaces out. I mean, I've seen some units that rent out to huge corporates, and it's a shame. I mean, Westgate's Westgate, and I know it gets a lot of hate, but, you know, it serves a purpose, actually. Mm. You know, rather than ordering everything online, you can actually go to a shop and try stuff on. And it's a big unit, and that is fine. But then everywhere else should be local independence, and the council should be pushing for that as well.
Mm, absolutely. I completely agree with you. I think there is only losers, isn't there, from an empty shop.
Have you walked down Broad Street recently?
There's very little. There's very little.
These Harry Potter shops and sweet shops. I mean, come on, that's not, you know, a legitimate business. And it's just a shame that they're not local businesses. And you see the markets that go up there. How great would it be if the council or the colleges said, actually, look, we'll give you a 2-year lease, 3-year lease. Mm-hmm. Go and use it for a little bit. Give us a little bit of money. And they're occupied. And that increases footfall, increases the economy in Oxford.
Absolutely. And really, as I was saying, there is currently there's only losers. Nobody's getting paid for the buildings. That there's nobody to go and enjoy the buildings. And as we all know, 98% of businesses in Britain are SMEs. So I think it's really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, on the other hand, I was just playing cricket actually last Monday and Tuesday, and 10 other guys aren't from Oxford. So I was showing them around, and to be fair, they absolutely loved it. But, you know, we were playing at the parks, and we saw all the colleges, and you see all the amazing buildings, which is great if you come visit. But if you're living here, it's a different story.
Absolutely. George, thank you so much for your thoughts so far. We'll continue the conversation after this.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson. Sponsored by We Do HR Support. Leave your HR to the experts so you can focus on what you do best.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. So today we've spoken all about hospitality in Oxfordshire. We've spoken about the Sandys Group. We've spoken about the fact that George is going to open a sports bar here in Oxford. But now I think it'd be really good to move away from hospitality and talk about Paddle People. So, George, you touched on it at the start of the show. So what is Paddle People? What's happening here in Oxford? And why should people get involved?
Paddle People is my company with a good friend of mine called James Rock. So we started it a couple of years ago. We in a previous life, James is still a rackets professional, but I used to be a rackets professional as well in Montreal and toured around America and also Manchester. And being sports people, we went to play paddle in Cheltenham. We haven't played for about 10 years and didn't actually realise it was around. And we just obviously loved it. And thought, God, there's got to be a business here. So I got back, went in my spreadsheets, entered a few figures. I went, oh yeah, actually there's a model here, and it's so addictive. It's super easy to play. There's a good stat, I think, in tennis, 15 minutes out of the hour you're playing the sport. In paddle, 50 minutes out of the hour you're playing the sport.
Amazing.
So it's much easier, a lot more rallies. You play basically off walls, so the ball stays in the court the whole time. So you're not having to walk miles to get balls. And it's a great leveler. I played with my mum. I played with my niece, and you know, different abilities, but it's still fun and it's still great. You know, if you're playing with your 8-year-old niece tennis, she's not going to have a 2-shot rally, 3-shot rally. Whereas here, she gets a 7, 8, 10-shot rally. So it's a fantastic sport. In Oxfordshire at the moment, there's a company called Smash Paddle who are doing good stuff. They got one in Vista. And they've just bought a company in Botley, and they've got 3 outdoor courts. So there's 3 outdoor courts in Botley, and there's 3 outdoor, well, actually 2 are semi-covered in Vista. We've got our place in Wimbledon. We're opening a new one in Wiltshire, but we're actually going through what's great for Oxfordshire. It's a brand new centre behind the parks. So it's a big project. We're going through our public consultation at the moment. I think it ends today. And the planning will be going in mid-July. So that will be 7 courts, 4 covered, 4 indoor, 3 outdoor, 4 cricket lanes, a golf simulator, a bar, cafe and shop, 2 multi-sport concrete areas, plus a cricket pitch and then a football or rugby pitch. So it's going to be a big centre. I think it's going to be amazing for the people of Oxford. We had our local consultation and it was overly positive. I think because a lot of people don't know paddle, there is some questions. And I think they would prefer to see more mainstream sports. However, it's an absolutely fantastic sport. And once I get them on court once, they will fall in love and they will keep playing. I think a lot of people, especially in that local community, because this what the site's going to be is you know, for the locals, is why is there not football? And they're trying to encourage the youth and the kids to be playing sport rather than graffitiing the buildings, which they currently are. So we do have some work to do to get them into play. But also there's other things. They can use the cricket nets, they can use the multi-sport nets, but we're aiming to be a centre for national tournaments. Oh, wow. You know, out in London, there are some good sites. There's not many sites that are perfect due to being fully indoor or high enough because it's a lot of a lobbing game. You lob a lot of the time. So you need the height, you need the infrastructure, you need a nice bar, changing rooms. So we'll be providing all that. And being in Oxford, it's a great link from London. So people are flying over from all across the world. Getting to Oxford's nice and easy. Whereas getting to Bristol seems to be the home of paddle at the moment. There's lots in Bristol and Manchester's growing a lot as well. So it'll be nice for somewhere a bit more further south for people close to London to play. So we're really looking forward to actually hosting a really top quality, world-class facility if we get through planning.
Amazing. We will keep our fingers crossed. And just in terms of paddle, is it a competitive sport? So you mentioned that you could play with your niece, your mum. Is it something that, like, is there leagues? Are there international competitions? And how do you see that growing?
Yeah, there absolutely are. I mean, I captained Oxfordshire at the National Counties in November. We played Somerset and Wiltshire and all sorts of counties. And Oxfordshire is a bit newer to the game, just because there was nothing there. So places like Scotland and Essex did really well. But, you know, it's all pretty close. I think we lost three out of four, but, you know, 7-6, 7-5, all pretty close. So we held a good account of ourselves. But there are a lot of tournaments. There's actually four tournaments in the UK. One's the LTA, which is a whole conversation for another time, probably. But there's a hot paddle tour. There's the iPaddle Tour. So there's a few. There's a Fem League, which is a women's league. So there's a lot of competitive tournaments. I played in two in the last sort of 2 months. Got to the final of one. We lost second round, another one, of different abilities. And it's funny, but I play a lot of cricket. And we're at the top of our league in amateur cricket, so you can't go any further amateur-wise. Mm. And so we're probably two levels away from professional cricket. In paddle, despite me being captain of Oxfordshire, I'm probably 12 levels away from the professional players. They are so unbelievably talented. It's huge in Spain. So the Spanish players are incredible. And yeah, their proper careers made out of it. They're the top guys in GB. There is a GB team that got announced last week. They are making a career out of this. And the more people will do. There's a lot more money coming into it. The investors are crazy. I mean, Beckham... they built courts at the Etihad Stadium and at Anfield. Their courts are going everywhere. So lots of big names play. Lots of cricketers play, lots of golfers play. So it is getting huge. We're still at the beginning. At the moment, there seems to be about 100,000 players in the UK. I think in 5 years' time, there'll be a million.
Wow.
I think it's going to be huge. Maybe 7 years, maybe a million, but it's going to be massive. There's the investment going in is backing up. The only issue why it hasn't grown as fast as they'd like is a planning issue. Mm. Just due to you need the land, and you can't be paying huge rents like other warehouses would be paying, and you need the height, which is important. Mm. And things like planning. If you're going outside, there are bats issue, there are moles issue, there's drainage issues. But the sport is going to be huge, and it's fascinating to see. You know, I know a lot of the professionals who are really trying to make it, and we try and support them as much as we can. So we give them some free courts in Wimbledon, and they'll do some exhibitions for us. Mm-hmm. But it is getting there. I mean, I will never be of that level, but I still play competitively with people I with people I can in Oxford. And I adore it. And I think other people will do soon.
Amazing. And if somebody listening is thinking, wow, that sounds really good, how can they get involved? So if you're listening at home, how can you get involved and try this sport?
Yeah, so as I said, there's two places in Oxfordshire, one in Bicester, one in Botley. The company is called Smash Paddle. So get in touch with them. There'll be an Instagram. There's an app they use called Playtomic. Playtomic, where you can just download that and play. There's some in Cheltenham. I'm trying to think where else. There's some by the east. There's some in High Wycombe. There's some in Milton Keynes. There's some in Reading. So they're popping around. Dalesford have some courts as well. We're looking at another site in Tame. So they're getting there. But at the moment in Oxfordshire, it's Smash Paddle is the company you want to get in touch with. They're doing a good job. They do a lot of great work with the kids as well, as their big USP is children playing paddle.
Amazing. No, really, really good. Final question before we move on to the ending part of the show. It's just around the new centre. Just around that process, because this is a business show. And I think that we find that people listen for two reasons. One, because they're particularly interested about a topic. It's an accountancy show and they run a business and they want to learn about accounts, or because something's just fascinating. And I'm just quite keen about this public consultation and planning and just that process. And I think, if you wouldn't mind, I'm just quite intrigued to hear about kind of how this centre has come about and really kind of your involvement, and what do you foresee are the steps before it's open, really?
Yeah, well, I'll go through how it came about. I mean, I constantly email different landlords and whoever about their sites and if we can open paddle. So a friend of mine who plays cricket at Horsebath, is a groundsman, and he said, George, I want to get in touch with these colleges. They want to do something with their land at some point. It's being, people are drawing all over the buildings and stuff and vandalising it. So get in touch. So, oh God, I'm not going to hear anything back. Another email going out. But you know what it's like in sales and stuff. You've got to keep going at it. So popped them an email. I had a meeting. I had to explain paddle to them. They had no idea. Didn't really seem much by it. Mm-hmm. 6 weeks went by. I then got back in touch. Said, look, any thoughts? I came back in and they said, well, look, why don't we build it for you and you run it? And we were like, okay. Great, we can do that. So they are actually building the whole full site. Oh, so they're financially doing it all, which is great. It's going to be an amazing thing for the college. And then we are basically leasing the land off them. So we're taking a 20-year lease, and we are leasing the land off them. So we pay a small fixed rent, and then we pay a topper upper if we hit certain thresholds. So you know, we're very much encouraged to get this busy. James and I will probably be working there full time. So on site, for me, it's nice and easy because the bar's around the corner as well. So it's great. And I live in Jericho as well, so it's a 15-minute walk. So that's sort of how it's structured. And the way it works is, you know, that people pay for a call. So during on-peak, it's about £10 an hour per person.
Right.
So £40 for the hour, which some may think is expensive, but actually if you're playing golf, or those sports, you know, you're paying that anyway. And that's our expensive court. That's it on peak. That will be the cheapest court in the country. So it will be the cheapest indoor centre in the country. We are currently Wimbledon at the moment. We're the cheapest in the country. And we think it's really important to keep those prices down. I mean, there are other courts in the city. There's one in Canary Wharf that is £120. But it's Canary Wharf, right? So it's different. So we're trying to keep our costs right down. The golf simulator will be a similar thing. So you can play Augusta, you can play Pebble Beach, wherever you want on the simulator. And again, it can be used as a training tool. So we'll have ad hoc coaches to come in and give training sessions, especially during the winter. Mm-hmm. But then also four lads can come in and play around a golf and have a few beers and have a laugh. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good thing to do. Golf simulators are brilliant fun. I mean, I'm a golfer as well. Well, I'm not very good, but I'm a golfer. And it's great. You know, you can just go and have a whack. If it's raining, right, let's go inside and play golf there. The cricket lanes as well, we'll be renting those out, but pretty cheaply. And getting local clubs to start using it. There's all sorts of wandering clubs, MCCs, Free Frosters, et cetera, who can use it, as well as local clubs on Saturday. I mean, in terms of our other businesses, we tend to, because as you said, it's a business show, we tend to rent a space and percentage of turnover as rent. We're a small company. we're keen to work with the landlord rather than just rent a space. And we will look at spaces to go fixed fee, but on the whole, you're looking at £22 a square foot for a warehouse. We need it to be at like £6 a square foot, if that. So what's fun is working with landlords who get it and who understand what it brings. So business parks is a really fascinating one we try to get into. You know, if you've got two business parks close together, one's got four courts there, that's going to attract a lot of companies to come use that park rather than another park. You know, and we'll give benefits to their members. So some companies understand the benefit of giving us a good deal in order to attract business elsewhere. And look, I'm biased, but we do a really good job at our current site. We're communication, as I said earlier in the call, is absolutely essential. If someone messages us on WhatsApp, we get back to them immediately. We give everyone our number. So everyone has got our WhatsApp. All the members. So if there's an issue, they message us, we message back within 2 minutes. Same with Instagram stuff. So it's super important that happens. There's nothing worse than turning up at a court and there's an issue, you can't rent a racket or whatever it may be. But, you know, we've had people call us at 5:45 in the morning saying, where is the place? I've got a 6 a.m. call. And, you know, James will get on the call and say, right, this is where you need to go. But they're about to see. So that's really important for us. So we like to work with landlords. So we create a community thing there. There's lots of businesses. So I'm going on a bit here, but it's talking about the businesses. There's lots of businesses that are huge. They've got tons of investment and they're putting 8 courts in. They're paying £500,000 a year on rent. So probably £1 million overall, all overheads for staff and electricity bills and rates, et cetera. And I can't see them making the money back because you can charge £60 for a court, but you've got to be so busy and it's about your occupancy rate. So that's why we want to take the risk out of it. We don't want to have to wake up in the middle of the night worrying about can we pay our rent or pay our staff. We got into this because we love Paddle. We want to enjoy the process. You know, I'm lucky enough to have the Sandy's group and James has his job as well at the moment. So we're both, you know, I can go full-time-ish on this. Like I said, I've got brilliant managers and James can go close to full-time-ish. He's in the school sector, so he's got holidays he can go full-time on as well. So we don't want to risk anything. We want to make sure our product is really, really good and we're not stressing the whole time. I think life's a bit too short for that. I've been through it too many times in the last 5 years with COVID and everything where, you know, you're losing businesses, you're losing money. And actually, you know, we want to create something fun. That's about it.
Amazing. No, thank you. And best of luck with it. I'm really, really, yeah, really looking forward to visiting once it's open. So thank you so much for that. We are coming very much towards the end of the show. But one of the things I do like to do on the show, and I'm not putting you on the spot with something completely fresh because you've given loads of insights. So you can just pick something that you've covered already if you wish. But one of the things in, I guess, the last sort of 30 seconds, really, that we like to leave is almost a top tip. So if somebody's been making notes throughout this show and they just to highlight one thing or something I just haven't asked that's fresh, what would be your top tip to take away as a thought-provoking tip?
I just talked about eliminating risk, which I would really encourage. However, you've got to take some risks at times. So I think when you do go to those risks, you've really got to think it out and think about the worst case scenario and what happens if that comes to fruition. You know, I've had failed businesses, I've had successful businesses, and the ones that haven't worked, I underestimated the risks. I think it's really important to think, right, what is the worst case scenario here? And what's the best case scenario? And are you in that position to be able to take that risk? So I think that's a really important one for you. And I think the other one I keep going on about is communication. Communication with your staff is probably the most important, and then with your clientele. I the amount of times I'm waiting for emails back from a week or 2 weeks, and I just I stop doing any business with people who can't reply within a week, because if you've got no time for me, I've got no time for you. There's nothing that you can't reply to a WhatsApp in bed or just an email. Just say I'm really busy at the moment, I'll get back to you in 10 days time. Fine, I've heard from you. So communication, and for communication on a day-to-day business, and if you're looking to do new things, just look at the risk and are you in a position to take that risk?
Amazing. Really, really good advice. But unfortunately, that is the end of the show. So thank you so much for joining me today, George. It's been a real, real pleasure and really, really insightful around a range of companies, some general business, and actually some really important things, some topics that we should be discussing in Oxford. So thank you for that. If you are just tuning in, I would definitely recommend listening back. And just a reminder, we've had George Sandbach of the Sandys Group and Paddle People. So do make sure that you follow up on both of those brands. Next week, we are back with three brand new guests, and we're going to be talking finance for business in Oxfordshire. And to do that, we're joined by Sam Jones of Satellite Finance. We're joined by Amanda Fisher of AJF Taxation, and we're joined by James Roswell of Metro Bank. So I'm sure that'll be a good one. And finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this show on the radio every Sunday at 11 a.m. You can also listen to the podcast version, which is available on all your favourite podcast platforms and is released on the Monday morning. And please do look out for the video format, which is available on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in and around Oxfordshire, enjoy it and support a local business. And we'll see you next week.